Chapter 17. In April 1964, with the Jack Ruby trial in the rearview mirror, Dorothy Kilgallen returned to New York City armed with an abundance of material collected about the JFK and Oswald assassinations. She was careful to safeguard the assassinations file, rarely if ever letting it leave her sight. Only Mark Sinclair, James Clement, her other hairdresser Charles Simpson, and on occasion Mark Lane, were privy to what she had learned both at the trial and from sources she contacted in Dallas. Sinclair and Clement continued to voice concerns about her going forward, each expressing the opinion that it was dangerous to do so. When famed attorney F. Lee Bailey, the appellate counsel for Dr. Sam Shepard, the Cleveland physician imprisoned for killing his wife, visited New York City, Kilgallen met with him. In the cozy corner of an upscale Manhattan hotel, Bailey updated Kilgallen on Dr. Shepard's appeal. She then provided him with crucial information regarding Shepard's trial, never divulged before. More about the case would be included in Kilgallen's book, Murder One. At the same time, Robert Kennedy spoke to JFK presidential confidant Ken O'Donnell about the Dallas assassinations. O'Donnell recalled, "I mentioned the syndicate, the mob, as a possibility. I'm certain RFK thought the mob had been involved. He suspected Carlos Marcello, the New Orleans capo to whom Jack Ruby had ties. All he kept saying was, 'They should have killed me,' without indicating who they were." That same month, NYC detectives arrested comedian Lenny Bruce when he used the F-word and too many other obscenities during a performance in Greenwich Village. The charges were based on a law prohibiting obscene, indecent, immoral, and impure exhibition and entertainment that would tend to the corruption of the morals of youth and others. Free speech was on trial. Many noted celebrities supported Bruce, including Paul Newman, Bob Dylan, Woody Allen, Susan Sontag, and John Updike. Kilgallen added her name to the cause. When Bruce's trial ensued, Kilgallen was the star defense witness in a packed courtroom that smelled like rotten tomatoes. Asked about the artistic merit of Bruce's act, she answered, "I think Lenny Bruce is a brilliant satirist, perhaps the most brilliant I have ever seen. And I think his social commentary, whether I agree with it or not, is extremely valid and important." Regardless, the jury convicted Bruce. That an appeals court reversed the decision symbolized Kilgallen's power at the time. The result caused Bruce's trial counsel to exclaim, "I have to think that Kilgallen had a lot to do with the ultimate result of the case. The briefs that were filed placed an enormous reliance on Kilgallen, again because of what she is and what she stands for." Meanwhile, day by day, Kilgallen continued to investigate the Dallas assassinations. She used her stature as an investigative reporter and media star to full advantage. And then, lightning struck when she was able to print a series of articles of enormous historical proportion, providing without question the most monumental exclusive in her illustrious journalistic career. These articles exposed the Jack Ruby testimony at the Warren Commission before its official release date. Speculation surrounding the mystery as to exactly how this happened has always clouded Kilgallen's achievement. But documents secured by this author in early July 2018 through the National Archives provide concrete proof regarding how she accomplished this amazing scoop. This proof is included in a never-before-published letter memo from J. Edgar Hoover to J. Lee Rankin, general counsel to the commission, regarding how Kilgallen received the transcript of Ruby's secret testimony. The letter read, "Dear Mr. Rankin, this will confirm your conversation of August 20th, 1964, with Mr. J. R. Malley of this bureau, wherein you requested that the Federal Bureau of Investigation conduct an investigation to determine how the transcript of Jack L. Ruby's testimony before the President's Commission on June 7, 1964, came into possession of Dorothy Kilgallen and the New York Journal-American. Enclosed herewith are two copies of a memorandum dated August 24, 1964, at New York City, setting forth the results of the interviews with Joseph Kingsbury Smith, publisher of the New York Journal-American, and Dorothy Kilgallen on August 21, 1964. In the absence of a specific request from the President's Commission, no effect will be made to conduct interviews of Commission members or its staff, or to conduct any other indicated investigation within the confines of the authority of the Commission over its personnel and activities, as it is felt that the Commission itself may wish to resolve any such matters. The investigation as requested is continuing, and you will be promptly advised of the results. Sincerely yours, J. Edgar Hoover. Above his familiar signature, Hoover acknowledged that Rankin requested an investigation as to how Kilgallen came into possession of the transcript of Ruby's testimony. The memo then states that accompanying pages set forth the results of interviews with Joseph Kingsbury Smith, publisher of the New York Journal-American, and Dorothy Kilgallen on August 21, 1964. The first attached page read, Federal Bureau of Investigation, New York, New York, August 24, 1964. Joseph Kingsbury Smith, Dorothy Kilgallen. The President's Commission on the Assassination of President Kennedy has requested that an investigation be conducted to determine how a transcript of the Commission's interview with Jack L. Ruby came into the possession of Dorothy Kilgallen and the New York Journal-American. Joseph Kingsbury Smith, publisher of the New York Journal-American, on August 21, 1964, advised that previous to that date, he asked Dorothy Kilgallen to identify the source who furnished her the transcript of Jack Ruby's interview by the President's Commission on the assassination of President Kennedy. Mr. Smith stated that Ms. Kilgallen refused to reveal her source, but did indicate to him that the source was someone inside the commission who was a friend of hers of long standing. Mr. Smith stated that he questioned Ms. Kilgallen thoroughly, and she told him that she would stake her reputation on the fact the transcript of Ruby's interview definitely was not stolen, not bought, and nothing illegal was done in obtaining it. Ms. Kilgallen told Mr. Smith that she would give her word of honor on this point. Mr. Smith stated that, on the basis of the above facts, the Journal-American's attorneys decided that publication of the Ruby transcript did not violate the law, since the President's Commission was not conducting a trial and was not trying Ruby. According to Mr. Smith, the attorneys for the newspaper said the transcript could be regarded as a journalistic matter. It is unclear which FBI agent wrote the account, but of interest is Kingsbury Smith telling the interviewer the publisher asked Kilgallen to identify the source who furnished her the transcript. The response was that she refused to reveal her source, but did indicate to him, publisher, that the source was someone inside the commission who was a friend of hers of long standing. Further, Kilgallen told Kingsbury Smith that she would stake her reputation on the fact the transcript of Ruby's interview definitely was not stolen, not bought, and nothing illegal was done in obtaining it, that she would give her word of honor on this point. Concerning the transcript's publication, the publisher said he consulted with his attorneys and decided printing the transcript did not violate the law, that it could be regarded as a journalistic matter. A chronicle of an interview by the agent or agents on August 21, 1964, at Kilgallen's townhouse at 45 East 68th Street, New York, New York, was then included on the next two pages. Dorothy Kilgallen was interviewed on August 21, 1964, at her townhouse, located at 45 East 68th Street, New York, New York. Ms. Kilgallen stated that she refused to reveal the source who gave her the transcript of the Jack Ruby interview by the President's Commission on the Assassination of President Kennedy. Ms. Kilgallen stated that she would identify the source only as a responsible person who had a legal right to the transcript. She stated that she was the only person who knew the identity of the source and that she would die rather than reveal his identity. Ms. Kilgallen said that she based her refusal to identify her source on the right of a newspaper reporter to protect his sources of information. Ms. Kilgallen specifically was asked whether or not the source was a member of the President's Commission itself, or a staff member or employee. She refused to answer. Ms. Kilgallen specifically was asked if the source was someone not on the commission, such as Ruby's defense counsel, or someone else who was present during the interview, or who might legally have received a copy of the transcript. She refused to answer. Ms. Kilgallen also said that she would refuse to give the date on which she received the Ruby transcript and would refuse to identify the city in which she obtained it. Ms. Kilgallen did state that her source was a man and not a woman. She said her source is a friend of hers of long standing. She stated that the source gave her the transcript as a friendly gesture. Whoever wrote the memo recalled that Kilgallen refused to reveal the source, but acknowledged it was a responsible person who had a legal right to the transcript. She told the agent that she was the only person who knew the identity of the source, and that she would die rather than reveal his identity. This was based, Kilgallen asserted, on the right of a newspaper reporter to protect his sources of information. Asked if the source was a member of the President's Commission itself, or a staff member or employee, or someone not on the commission, such as Ruby's defense counsel, Kilgallen refused to answer. Kilgallen also would not divulge the date she received the Ruby transcript or identify the city in which she obtained it. Kilgallen, the memo stated, admitted the source was a man, not a woman, a friend of hers of long standing, and the source gave her the transcript as a friendly gesture. The next page read, Ms. Kilgallen stated that she would swear that the transcript was not stolen and nothing illegal was done in obtaining it. She stated that she did not pay money for the transcript and did not give or promise her source anything else of value in exchange for the transcript. Ms. Kilgallen refused to say if she first approached the source or if the source first approached her about the transcript. She stated this source gave her a typed transcript of the Ruby interview. She kept the transcript several days and had copies made, including photostats. Ms. Kilgallen then gave the transcript back to her source. Ms. Kilgallen recalled from memory that the transcript she received was numbered from page 1 to page 103. She said that one page was missing. She believes the missing page was numbered 59. Otherwise, the transcript appeared to be complete. Page 103 of the transcript was a notarized statement from the stenographer, who was present during the interview. Ms. Kilgallen stated the New York Journal-American does not know the identity of her source, and in fact, she told the newspaper less than she told the interviewing agents. Ms. Kilgallen did not furnish any other information of value. She stated that she is the only person who knows the identity of her source, and she will never reveal it. Ms. Kilgallen volunteered to go to Washington, D.C. to testify on this matter before the President's Commission. She emphasized, however, that she also will refuse to identify her source to the Commission or anyone else. She stated that regardless of the consequences, she will never identify the source to anyone. According to the document, Kilgallen would swear that the transcript was not stolen and nothing illegal was done in obtaining it. She stated that she did not pay money for the transcript and did not give or promise her source anything else of value in exchange for the transcript. The agent said Kilgallen refused to say if the source first approached her about the transcript. She told the agent the source had given her a typed transcript that she kept for several days and had copies made, including photostats. which is an early projection photocopier, before giving the transcript back to her source. The agent, or likely agents, interrogating Kilgallen, reported that she said the transcript was numbered from page 1 to page 103. She said one page was missing, and believed it to be page 59. Page 103, Kilgallen stated, included a notarized statement from the stenographer who was present during Ruby's interview. Of special importance is the final paragraph of the memo, which read, "Miss Kilgallen volunteered to go to Washington, D.C. to testify on this matter before the President's Commission. She emphasized, however, that she also will refuse to identify her source to the Commission or anyone else. She stated that regardless of the consequences, she will never identify the source to anyone." True to Kilgallen's strong character, her integrity, she never disclosed the name of the source, even though the consequences could have been possible prosecution. One may only imagine the pressure imposed upon her when at least one, and in all likelihood at least two, FBI agents descended on her home. Without legal counsel to defend her rights, this brave woman faced down the agents, representatives of arguably the second most powerful man in the U.S. government next to JFK, forcing them to return to Hoover with the proverbial tail between their legs. Just imagine the director's strong vocal response, his rage, to their not having been able to break Kilgallen and discover her source. These were tough agents who had interrogated heavyweight criminals and brought them to their knees, and yet they had to tell Hoover that Kilgallen had won the interrogation battle. Kilgallen's receiving the secret documents and printing them had begun with an apparent clandestine meeting with her friend at the commission. Based on her scathing Journal American columns and articles, he must have been aware of the reporter's disdain for Hoover and questions she had about the commission's intention to pursue the truth about JFK's death. Kilgallen told no one of her secret source, but when she ran into Howard Rothberg, an interior designer and friend, she showed him a thick grouping of papers hidden inside the Life magazine cover depicting Lee Harvey Oswald holding the Mannlicher Carcano rifle the authorities swore he used to assassinate John F. Kennedy. When Rothberg asked, "What's this?" Kilgallen calmly replied, "It's just part of the Warren Commission report." Though Kilgallen showed calm on the outside, her heart was beating like that of a 100-yard dash Olympic sprinter. She knew she would have a chance to read Ruby's testimony before any other reporter did so. She could also publish it for the world to read while comparing his testimony at the Warren Commission with the Ruby trial testimony notes she had collected. Based on Kilgallen's reputation for truth-telling, Kingsbury Smith decided to rush the documents to print as soon as possible after consulting with his attorneys. The newspaper would have an exclusive, a scoop of unimaginable proportions, since millions of people were awaiting the Warren Commission report with anticipation on a daily basis. In fact, one may only imagine that during an era when television was in its infancy, and the internet decades into the future, what an incredible exclusive Kilgallen was responsible for in light of the historical importance of Jack Ruby's Warren Commission testimony. Perhaps later disclosure of the Nixon White House tapes, exposure of the Pentagon Papers, and Edward Snowden's leak of classified information from the National Security Agency, or NSA, in 2013 may provide a comparison. Of these three, the release of the Pentagon Papers, published by the Washington Post, offers context as to the risk Kilgallen endured by exposing what, at the time, amounted to government secrets, since Ruby's testimony before the Warren Commission was supposedly kept under lock and key. Like Katharine Graham, the Post's publisher, in fact the first female publisher of a major newspaper in the United States, Kilgallen had a choice to make when provided with Ruby's testimony: publish or not publish. This dilemma continued as her editors at the Journal American considered what possible repercussions the famed reporter and the newspaper might endure. Similarly, Graham was specifically told that she and the newspaper could be held in contempt of court, based on a previous court ruling, if they printed the Pentagon Papers. The papers had been given to them by Daniel Ellsberg, an American activist and former U.S. military analyst, who, while employed by the Rand Corporation, stole a top-secret Pentagon study of U.S. government decision-making in relation to the Vietnam War. While making her decisions, Graham, played by vaunted actress Meryl Streep in the 2018 Academy Award-nominated film The Post, was informed she actually could go to prison if convicted of contempt of court. The Nixon administration also threatened to destroy The Post if it did not bow down to the pressure exerted by Nixon's White House. Kilgallen had her enemies, certainly J. Edgar Hoover for one. Graham had Nixon and his administration minions. Graham's advisors, with the exception of Ben Bradley, all scolded her in view of Nixon's threats to stop the presses and not publish the papers. But in the end, she showed significant courage, stood firm despite the danger, and ordered the secret documents to be published. Nixon's lawyers took the case involving The Post and The New York Times, which had also published a portion of the papers, to the Supreme Court. But Graham's decision was vindicated, and the papers continued to be published. Like Graham, Kilgallen believed strongly in the freedom of the press, and while Sinclair, Clement, and Simpson urged her to lay off the investigation into JFK's death, Kilgallen was certain the American public had a right to know what Ruby had told the commission. One must remember that she also had knowledge of what the plethora of witnesses at the Ruby trial had testified to regarding Ruby's words and actions before and after he shot Oswald. Kilgallen could thus compare that testimony with what Ruby told the commission so as to consider whether there had been distortions of history in evidence. Printing Ruby's testimony for the world to read must be considered a crowning moment in a journalistic career matched by few, if any, reporters before Kilgallen's era or since. Graham may have been risking her freedom and the Post's very existence, but Kilgallen was thumbing her nose at dangerous foes, especially Hoover, who could very well cause the reporter physical harm. Note that in his letter to Rankin, he closed with the words, "The investigation as requested is continuing, and you will be promptly advised of the results." On August 9, 1964, the Journal American printed and the Associated Press circulated the story across the country and around the world in three parts. Kilgallen's comments preceded the articles. "What you are about to read is the transcript of the testimony given by Jack Ruby to Chief Justice Earl Warren and other members of the Warren Commission investigating the assassination of President Kennedy. The transcript is 102 pages long and is a word-by-word account of the three-hour, five-minute interrogation of Jack Ruby, the third member of a triangle that has become an irrevocable part of history." The initial copy employed the headline, "Stories quote Ruby saying slaying was his own idea." Excerpts included, "Jack Ruby, in a purported secret testimony given to the Warren Commission, said it was strictly his own idea to kill Lee Harvey Oswald, accused assassin of President Kennedy. In a copyrighted story Tuesday by Journal American columnist Dorothy Kilgallen, Ruby was quoted as having told Justice Warren June 7th, 'I was never malicious toward this person. No one else requested me to do anything. I never spoke to anyone about attempting to do anything. No subversive organization gave me any idea. No underworld persons made any effort to contact me. It all happened that Sunday morning.'" Since Kilgallen had interviewed Ruby twice, knew of the damaging testimony at his trial about his ruse as a reporter and his intention to be at the jail basement when Oswald was being transferred, and had basically labeled him a gangster in one of her columns, she was naturally dubious about his Warren Commission testimony. To that end, on August 20th, under the banner headline, "In Tough Spot," Ruby told Justice, and the subheadline, "Club Owner Rips Lawyer on Motive," with another Hearst paper using the headline, "His Own Lawyer Lied," Ruby tells Warren, Kilgallen directly quoted Ruby as having told Chief Justice Earl Warren, "Boys, I am in a tough spot, I tell you that." According to Kilgallen's reading of the transcript, then turned his wrath toward trial counsel Melvin Belli. Ruby accused his lawyer of distorting the facts as to whether Ruby's killing of Oswald was premeditated, swearing it was not. Kilgallen's September 2nd headline, "Pre-Assassination Mystery. Warren Told Strange Trio Got Together." A man who loved President Kennedy, a man highly critical of President Kennedy, a policeman who was killed immediately after President Kennedy's assassination, echoed what she had written during the Ruby trial. Kilgallen then wrote, "These incongruous three allegedly met in Jack Ruby's Dallas's Carousel Club 8 nights before the president's murder, according to previously secret and unpublished testimony given the Warren Commission." The strange trio, Kilgallen noted, were Ruby, who allegedly loved the president, J.D. Tippett, the policeman, and Bernard Weissman, the businessman critical of JFK. The account appeared credible to Kilgallen, since, while Ruby never admitted that the reported meeting took place, whenever asked, he didn't directly deny it either. Commenting on Kilgallen's scoop, an Associated Press article announced, "According to the New York Times, Warren Commission officials have expressed distress concerning the Journal American article, which, on superficial examination, appeared to contain verbatim secret testimony. Ms. Kilgallen said she obtained the actual transcript of Warren's interview with Ruby from sources close to the Warren Commission in Washington." That commission attorneys, specifically Rankin, had asked FBI Director Hoover to investigate the leak was confirmed in a Herald Tribune headline. It read, "Outcry over Ruby lead brings a federal probe." Agents with orders to discover Kilgallen's source interviewed everyone who had knowledge of the Ruby interviews. Those close to the investigation, including attorneys, district attorneys, a jailer, and various secretaries, became suspects. True to her nature of protecting sources or anyone suspected of being a source, Kilgallen, whose father had always told her to tell the truth, stated, as noted in the FBI interview, that the source was not a woman, apparently clearing the court reporter who had transcribed Ruby's testimony. Addressing the FBI probe, Kilgallen, further irritating Director Hoover and the Bureau, posted a Journal American column entitled, "Maybe You Didn't Know." She wrote, "From what I have read, I would be inclined to believe that the FBI might be more profitably employed in probing the facts of the case rather than how I got them, which does seem a waste of time to me." At any rate, the whole thing smells a bit fishy. It's a mite too simple that a chap kills the President of the United States, escapes from that bother, kills a policeman, eventually is apprehended in a movie theater under circumstances that defy every law of police procedure, and subsequently is murdered under extraordinary circumstances. The Warren Report made a great effort to note that the FBI and the Secret Service were delinquent in their duty, and that the press media, TV, radio, and newspaper also were responsible for the confusion that made Oswald's murder possible. Baloney. Oswald was not killed by a newspaper man. He was killed by a nightclub owner well known to the police, Jack Ruby. How could the Warren Commission pretend to forget that? In a subsequent Journal American column, titled "Search for the Truth," Kilgallen observed, "The Warren Commission Ruby testimony is a fascinating document. Fascinating for what it leaves unsaid, as well as what it says. Based on what she heard at Ruby's trial, via disclosure here of the Ruby trial transcripts, her stating, "For what it leaves unsaid," is easy to understand, since nowhere in the report did she find accounts of critical testimony about Ruby's actions prior to shooting Oswald. Commenting on Ruby's state of mind, Kilgallen added, "He opened the floodgates of his mind and unleashed a stream of consciousness that would have dazzled a James Joyce buff and enraptured a psychiatrist." There was a great deal of fear inside Jack Ruby that Sunday in June when he testified. He feared for his own life. He feared for the lives of his brothers and sisters. Kilgallen did not disclose whom Ruby feared, but common sense dictates that the low-life strip club operator and mafia wannabe, who did not relax until he knew Oswald was dead, Detective Archer's account, must have continued to be afraid of those who had ordered him to kill JFK's alleged assassin. Kilgallen reporting that Ruby feared for his own life acknowledged her continued probe of Ruby's connection to JFK's death. This put those whom Ruby feared on notice that she was not about to drop her investigation. On August 22nd, Kilgallen read newspaper accounts, including one posted in the Boston Herald under the headline, "Jack Ruby's Stories Seen Ruin of Warren Commission." In the article, Melvin Belli blasted Kilgallen's premature exposure of Ruby's testimony before the Warren Commission. Belli stated that it had destroyed the integrity of the commission's investigation. This was an understatement, as later evidence would prove. Of more interest to Kilgallen was a Belli comment. He said, "Ruby pleaded with me not to put him on the witness stand. He told me, if I go on, they'll cut me to ribbons." Kilgallen knew that Belli had twisted the words around. She knew it was Ruby who wanted to testify, and Belli who had forbidden him from doing so. Kilgallen also realized that Belli's quote conflicted with Ruby's Warren Commission statement to Chief Justice Warren. She had exposed it in her Journal American articles. "I wanted to get on the stand and tell the truth about what happened that morning. But Belli said, Jack, when they get you on the stand, you are actually speaking of a premeditated crime that you involved yourself in. But I didn't care because I wanted to tell the truth. Belli said, when the prosecution gets you on the stand, they will cut you to ribbons." Kilgallen knew Belli was lying. In addition to her February 1964 column, alluding to suspicions about Belli's defense, and her questions about Ruby's contradictory behavior the day after JFK was shot, Belli's false statements in the Boston article triggered additional suspicion on her part as to the potential for a cover-up. This convinced her that the investigation into JFK and Oswald's deaths must continue unabated. Earl Ruby later confirmed Jack's demands to testify, and Belli's refusal to let him do so. It was one reason Belli was fired shortly after the trial.